You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
As discussed, the census changes raise concerns around gathering data on marginalised groups and communities. Lower sample sizes and differences in the method of data collection can expose the data to biases and could lead to poor representation of said communities. The collection and use of administrative data also raises concerns around data sovereignty and increased state surveillance. To discuss these concerns, I spoke to Associate Professor of Politics at Victoria University and Senior Research Fellow in the Faculty of Statistics at the University of Auckland, Dr. Lara Greaves. So today we're talking about cuts to the census. There's been several reasons given by the government for these cuts, particularly around cost and also in assurances that replacement data collection methods will be adequate. One concern that's come up is that while the census is a nationwide survey, these smaller surveys and administrative data can only capture a portion of the population. What are the groups that are being left out?
So basically what the census is it's a survey of everyone in the country. And traditionally it hasn't actually gotten everyone in the country. We know that Māori have been less likely to fill it out. The census has been less good at reaching out to them and finding them and meeting them in ways that suit them, really. And different sort of migrant and Pacifica groups, the census hasn't been so good at reaching in the past. So now what we're seeing this cut to that face-to-face, you know, that online, that enumerated, or what we call an enumerated census. So that's going. And they're going to be replacing that with administrative data, which is all of our interactions we have with the government. So, you know, when you sign up, you know, for your student allowance, that's recorded in administrative data. When you go to the emergency room, that's recorded in administrative data, and so on. So that's going to fill the gaps. And then another part of this whole idea is that there will be, from time to time, smaller surveys where they might survey a smaller percentage of the population rather than pretty much door-knocking everyone or sending out census forms to everyone. So that's the other thing there. We haven't had a lot of detail necessarily about what those surveys will look like. They have consulted with different, for example, LGBT groups and different ethnic communities, but we're not quite clear on what that will look like yet in practice.
Yeah, you mentioned a little bit the kinds of administrative data that the government will be using here. There's been some, I guess, vagueness around the term and what it might mean in practice. What kind of administrative data is the government collecting and what kind of picture does it paint about people?
Well, like I said before, every sort of interaction that you have with the government, you know, I think when you fill out a form, and some of my research looks at, you know, like the ethnicity box you fill out on a form or the iwi affiliation or Māori box that you fill out on the form, right? So every time you fill out a form, that form goes somewhere. And those forms, they're used, and obviously for the day-to-day practice of whatever government agency that is. So, like, you know, when you get arrested, the police, or, like, when you go to the hospital needs that record, and that's treated a different way and in very different ways depending on the government agency. But some of those records do go to this, it's a set of integrated data infrastructure, which is a set of data sets that are linked together. Your identifying information is stripped away from it, so you don't necessarily have to worry about someone looking up, you know, your name and then finding out all this information about you. But that database has been in operation since about 2011, where they started to link some tax data, and it's just kind of blossomed out and grown. And, you know, there's a lot of discussions about this thing called social license. That's where the public knows that this is happening and is kind of okay with it, you know, on a trade-off kind of day-to-day balance. Are they okay with it? That's the idea of social license. But a lot of people don't really know that the government is doing this and are not necessarily comfortable with it. So there's a lot of concerns around that. There's also concerns about surveillance. So, you know, we know that different companies, for example, Meta or Google, know a lot about us and kind of surveil us, send us ads or whatever it is. But the idea that the government is doing it makes a lot of people feel uncomfortable, and especially a lot of Māori feel uncomfortable given our history with the state.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about surveillance a bit later on, but I wanted to talk about now. You mentioned the concerns around the census and not reaching, I guess, Māori and Pacific communities. With this new use of administrative data and survey data, are there concerns that, you know, especially with rural Māori communities and rural Pacific communities, are there concerns that these communities could be further excluded from data collection?
Well, it really is. There's so many different factors involved here. So colleagues and I wrote a piece on behalf of some of the executive of Te Mana Rauranga, the Māori Data Sovereignty Network. And he thinks for us, you know, on balance, we can see the need to move away from something like the census. But what we really need in between is that proper engagement with communities to figure out how we will, as a sort of data system, how we will make sure that we have good data on these sort of intersectional communities is the best way I'd refer to them. So say you do a survey of 10,000 people, and it's a representative, high-quality survey. You put money in, you go door-knocking, you do all of that. So 10,000 people, and, you know, latest estimates are around 16, 17% of people are Māori. So then you're down to 1,600, say 1,700 people. And then say you want to look at LGBT, Māori, takatāpui, and then you're looking at maybe 10% of people. So see the sample size gets smaller and smaller. And so that limits our ability to be able to have really robust, reliable data for sub-communities, for intersectionality, for different people. We all know we're all members of so many different social groups that have different policy needs. So that limits the ability for us to be able to zoom in on different communities in a way that we'd want to. The other thing with administrative data is it doesn't collect kind of data about well-being and who communities and people are in the same way that a good survey or a census does. So that's another limitation there. You know, when you're, that data is collected on you when you're like, you're down and out, you're at your most vulnerable, you know, you're having a terrible time for most of those data sets, you know, things like corrections, things like hospital data sets. So it doesn't let us necessarily paint the picture of our communities and the strengths of our communities in the way that we would hope that the data system would move to, not that the census necessarily did that well, but it's kind of a missed opportunity there.
Yeah, and with that poor picture being painted, it seems like a good time to come back around to the surveillance data. Mm. How common is the collection of surveillance data, and is there a possibility of it being used, I guess, at the present, but also after the census is scrapped?
Yeah, that's one of the things that we've heard over the years, many years with the census. There was the wizard in Christchurch that would always famously say, I'm not filling out the census, don't want the government knowing my information. And that's just been kind of a long-running theme, that people have been willing to, say, take the fine and not do the census because it has been compulsory. And we've seen, you know, falling response rates over the years. So that is one reason that people don't want to be part of the census. But what we've seen since 2011 with the integrated data infrastructure is the slow increase in administrative data being collected and being kind of pulled together in a way that a lot of people don't know about and are not comfortable with. StatsNZ did some survey research themselves and found that, you know, it's a minority of people that know that this is going on. And so can we really consent to this? The issue with it as well is that you can't opt out of government services. Like if you're at the hospital, they're collecting data on you. You can't be like, oh no, actually I'm going to treat this infection myself. You know, it's not, you can't really opt out. And for example, you're on the plane coming back from Australia and there's this little, you know, thing in the traveller declaration form saying your data are going to be used. You can't really be like, no, I'm not going to get off the plane. These are not really options for people. So that's where a lot of people are really concerned about this whole idea of surveillance. And we're seeing it as well pop up in America with this idea that there would be a linked database and the kind of outrage about the idea that anyone would link data across government agencies. But we've had that to some extent in New Zealand. So it is really like a bit of a freedom and a rights issue, but it also creates a lot of concerns for communities that are over-surveilled anyway, for Māori communities in particular. There's been different points in the government's sort of policy history, especially under that sort of Bill English, John Key government, where they discuss this idea of predictive risk modelling. So using some of these data points to try to see who would be more at risk or less at risk for, you know, future negative behaviour, and to try and target people with interventions. And that there's ways to do that, or ways to engage with communities to do that kind of idea well, to do social investment well, but there's also a lot of risks in those sorts of approaches where you start targeting people based on them being more expensive to the government. So there's a lot of kind of politics around that part of the equation too.
And did you have anything else you wanted to add?
I would just say that if anyone is interested in Māori data sovereignty, to follow Te Mana Rodonga, the Māori Data Sovereignty Network. We're on LinkedIn, which is very corporate of us, but we also have a membership list. So we're going to keep kind of following these issues and looking at them from different Māori perspectives.
That was Associate Professor of Politics at Victoria University, Dr. Lara Greaves. You can find more information about Te Mana Rauranga in this interview's BCast, which you can find on 95bfm.com later today.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.